I brought a little friend with me today. I don't want to freak any of you out if you don't like animals or anything like that. But I went to the pet store and I had to buy myself a frog. So I have him with me. This is my frog. I don't know its name yet. I haven't had time. I try not to get too attached. Frog, what's your name, by the way?
Kermit.
Kermit? Are you Kermit the Frog? I mean, you don't look like Kermit the Frog. I mean,
no, I'm not Kermit the Frog.
You're like a knockoff brand or something like that? I mean,
50% cheaper.
Okay, that's probably why I have you. Okay, that makes sense now. I'm sure little kids can't tell the difference at all. You know, Kermit, you're very important to me today.
Really?
Yes. I won't kiss you, though. But I wouldn't like you, though. I did prepare a place for you in this nice tub here. If you just sit in there during the service, you'll be a great help to me, and just as an illustration.
I don't know about that.
Oh, come on. It's just a pot.
Well, have any of you ever had frog legs before?
I've never had frog legs. I don't think anyone, a few people might have had frog legs here. But really, I mean, it's not a dangerous, someone admitted it. It's not a dangerous thing here. It's cold water.
Oh, okay. But if it's hot, I'm jumping out.
Okay, Kermit, just feel it and touch it.
Oh, it's cold.
Just as you like it. Why don't you hop in?
Okay.
All right, Kermit.
Are you sure you're not going to cook?
No, you're fine. Just sit in there, and you'll be fine. Okay. He'll just sit there and stew for a little bit. I don't know if you saw what's under there. Don't tell him, but I have this burner, and I'm going to turn it on now. Uh-oh, it's not plugged in. That's important. All right. Everything nice and cold?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, well, I invite you, as Kermit sits there, as we're preparing our family night feast, turn with me to Haggai. Haggai is just three chapters before the New Testament, before Matthew. So Matthew, then back one is Malachi, then Zechariah, then Haggai. We're not done with Haggai yet. It's a small book, but we're still in it. As you turn to Haggai chapter 2, remember that in 586 B.C., before Christ, the people of Persia, the nation of Persia, came in to Jerusalem, into the city, to Israel, to the city of Jerusalem, and utterly destroyed the city, burned down the temple, and took many of the people of Israel into captivity. And they were in captivity for 70 years. It was in that time, before the 70 years was up, the king of Persia, King Cyrus, and you can read about this in Ezra chapter 1 if you read Ezra. King Cyrus wrote a proclamation, this decree. And he actually said that the God of the heavens and the earth, he spoke to him and told him to send the people of Israel back home so they could rebuild the temple. And if you read a little further in Ezra, you will find out that God stirred in the hearts of the people to go home and to rebuild the temple. So not only did God tell the king, but he told the people individually, go home and rebuild your temple that is burned down and destroyed. So the people come home, if you remember, and they come home with a passion to rebuild this temple of God. Of course, they get home, then one obstacle after another, their passion dies out, the temple is still desolate, still in ruins, and they go off, say it's not time to build the temple. So in the first chapter of Haggai, if you remember, as we studied, Haggai comes with the first message from God. He says, where has your passion gone? Come, rebuild the temple. You came here with such a passion to build this thing, to serve God. Where has it gone? So the people respond and they start building the temple. In the second chapter, last week, we looked and we read how the people were getting discouraged. Like, everything they brought, it wasn't going to be good enough. Whatever they had, their skills were limited, their supplies were limited. They just don't have what it takes to build this temple. It's not going to be as beautiful as it was before. So Haggai comes again and says, be encouraged, don't lose heart. Whatever you bring to God, whatever you offer him, he'll take it and he'll blow it up. He'll magnify it to make it better than anything you imagined. And so today we find ourselves Haggai chapter 2 verse 10. Now let me warn you about something here. Haggai is going to give a message that has sort of two parts. And he's going to talk, the first part, he's going to say, you know what, before the point where you started to build this temple, before you started to build it, you were people that were not in my favor. You were, in a sense, a cursed people because you were disobedient to me. But once you started building the temple, now you're my favor. Now you're going to be blessed. And so Haggai comes to them and he talks to them. Although they started building the temple already, he talks to them as if they haven't. He wants them to understand what life was like before this. He wants them to remember that they were at a time where nothing was going well. They were, in a sense, a cursed people. And he's using this language so that they will understand the change that comes from one place to another from this point on. So Haggai chapter 2, verse 10. On the 24th day of the ninth month in the second year of Darius, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Haggai. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Ask the priests what the law says. If a person carries a consecrated meat in the fold of his garment, and the fold touches some bread or stew, some wine, oil, or other food, does it become consecrated, holy? The priest answered, no. Then Haggai said, if a person defiled by contact with a dead body touches one of these things, does it become defiled? Yes, the priest answered, it becomes defiled. Then Haggai said, so it is with this people and this nation in my sight, declares the Lord. Whatever they do and whatever they offer, there is defiled. Now give careful thought to this. From this day on, consider how things were before one stone was laid upon another in the Lord's temple. When anyone came to a heap of 20 measures, there was only 10. When anyone went to wine vast to draw 50 measures, there was only 20. I struck all the work of your hands with the blight, with mildew and hail, yet you did not turn to me, declares the Lord. So Haggai starts this message from God with a question, with two questions. And one question is just the antithesis of the other. Now in this time, they lived by a concept, a principle that we don't live by. There were things that they had in their world that they lived that were holy, consecrated. So the temple was a holy place. You behaved, you didn't act and do certain things in the temple, otherwise God would strike you down and kill you. It's a holy place. When you offered sacrifices to God of the meat or the burnt offerings, once you sacrificed it, it became holy. And you had to handle that with very cautiously when it was holy. On the other side, there are things that were just defiled, things that were unclean. You touch a dead body, you became unclean for 7 days. Certain animals you touched or ate were unclean. If you sinned, you became unclean, you became defiled. So the question that Haggai asked the priests, who were the interpreters of the law, says, if you have something that's holy, an offering, a burnt offering, and you touch something that's just normal, like a bread or stew or wine, you touch it with something that's holy, is that holiness transferable? Does that normal stuff become consecrated? And the priest said, no, it doesn't become holy. You can't transfer holiness. So then he asked the other question. Well, if you have someone who's unclean, who touched a dead body, and they touch the stew or the wine, is their defilement, their uncleanliness, transferable? And the priest said, yes, it is. That's how it is. And then Haggai says, so it is with you. So it is with this people in this generation. What Haggai's doing is taking the circumstances, the situations around the people that's sometimes hard to understand and evaluate, and he's putting it on a very simple scale for them to see. You see, these people come and they live in a holy land, a land that's set apart. They come to a temple and worship God in a holy, consecrated temple. But just because they live in this land and they touch and they come to the temple doesn't make them holy. But these people are defiled, God says. Because you didn't build my temple, because you weren't obedient to me, because you live in sin, everything you touch is unacceptable. So you come to my sanctuary, you offer me praise, you offer me your burnt offerings and your tithe. All the things you touch and you offer me are defiled and unacceptable. This is how it is with you guys. It's unacceptable. I wonder how my frog's doing in here. He's still moving around pretty good. But I think it's about time we add some things. The water's getting a little bit hotter. I thought with every, I don't know if you noticed, but the frog didn't have any legs, so we can't make frog legs. But we can have frog stew. So every stew needs some vegetables. add vegetables in the stew. We'll have some hot chili powder we'll add to it too. Alright. Gotta get the salt and the pepper. Alright. And garlic. Alright, gotta have some other taste besides the frog for the next few days in your mouth. Alright. When I was in high school, my parents took me to Washington, D.C. to visit some historical sites. We also went to Massachusetts, to Boston, Massachusetts, and some other places around there. And so as I was out and about these places, I was picking up postcards for my friends. I was going to mail home like halfway through my trip. And so I get different postcards and save them up to mail home. Now, I was looking for one special postcard. I was looking for the best postcard because I had a girlfriend back home, and I wanted to give her the best postcard to send her back. It wasn't going to be like the other postcards. This was going to be a special one. And so as I was going through, I pick up different postcards. And then I remember one day we went to the theater where Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. What's the theater called? Anyone know? Ford, okay. You guys, good history. So I went to Ford Theater. And in the basement is a whole bunch of, memorabilia shop, And so there's some postcards down there. And immediately my eye caught one postcard. I'm like, this is the special one. This is so unique and so special. I'm going to save this one for the girl back home. So the next day I get home, I get all my cards out, and I start writing just letters to some of my friends. And I save the special one for last. And after I'm done writing all those, I get my special postcard out. I look at it, and I start writing in it, a letter. And then I go to a mailbox after putting stamps in it. And I put one envelope in it at a time. First one is, Lincoln Memorial. The other one's a picture of Washington, D.C.'s. Another postcards of a place in, some author's house in Boston. And then there's my last card. The one I got at Ford Theater. A picture of four men that conspired, who were part of the conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln. Four men being hanged to death for their part in the assassination. Just for it, and the whole crowd is around them watching them. That was a picture of this postcard. I thought it was so neat and so special. This is so, what a cool picture that was. And here I put it in, and I'm like, she's gonna love this card. It's cool, it's a neat card. So I get home about 2 weeks later, and on Wednesday night at youth group, I go in, and I see her, and I go up to say hi to her, how she's doing, and she looks at me. There's a wicked evil look in my eye. And she just storms off and walks away. I'm like, what's going on here? I just sent you a, what's going on? Why are you so mad? And so I tried to go and talk to her. She won't talk to me. And so the next day, I call her. What's wrong? And she hangs up on me. And so finally, after a while, I get her to talk to me. And she says, I can't believe you sent me this card of people hanging. I thought someone wanted to kill me or something. I'm surprised she just never talked to me again, I guess now. But, my heart was in it. I had good intentions. I wanted to do good. It just, my actions weren't maybe proper, I guess. I don't know. We look at these people, the nation of Israel, and, God is upset with them because they're not building the temple, but, they're not bad people. I think they have a good heart. They have good intentions here. They're coming. They're following the law. They're serving Him. They're coming here to worship. They're giving their praises. They're giving their produce. Their tithe. They're giving their offering. They're offering sacrifices and burnt offerings. They're obeying the law, and they're not worshiping other gods. They're not following other nations or seeking after money. And as a matter of fact, when another nation, the Samaritans, wanted to help them rebuild the temple, they declined it because the Samaritans were unclean. They were unholy people. And they didn't want them to contaminate their work of the temple. Their heart was in the right place. They wanted to serve God. But it didn't matter. Because God was holding them accountable for their own ignorance. God is saying, you're guilty for not knowing what I want. I tried to warn you. I told you, I warned you, and you did not listen. Kermit, you still alive? Oh, I think he's dead. He's cooked. Can you imagine that? The water got hotter and hotter and hotter, and he never jumped out. Even when the vegetables went in, even when the salt and the garlic went in, he still didn't get cautious. He didn't remember how cold it was at first and how hot it's getting now. He was totally unaware of his environment around him. Totally unaware. That's why God is so upset with these people. Because they didn't remember God's message. God told them twice through King Cyrus and through their own hearts to come home and rebuild the temple. It's like they forgot it. And when they came and when they forgot, God sent, remember, hail, and he sent mildew that destroyed their crops. And these people who know the law, who know in Deuteronomy it talks about, if you obey me, I will bless you, I will give you your land, I'll give you your crops, and you have a harvest. But if not, you'll be destroyed. They knew that. And although they were not being blessed with the produce, they weren't paying attention to the atmosphere around them. They weren't paying attention to the different signs that God was giving them, warnings that the things aren't right with their relationship. Vegetables were falling down, water was getting hotter, and they never paid attention. They just sat there. They're guilty for their own ignorance. Now, if you read about people in scriptures like Joshua or David, these are people, when they see something going wrong, something that it doesn't line up with God's promise, they always fall to their face and seek God for wisdom. Joshua, when he leads people into the promised land for battle and they lose, Joshua says, this isn't right. This isn't what God promised. Something's wrong. And he falls on his face before God and he seeks him for wisdom. This isn't lining up with your promise. And God says, one of you sinned. And Joshua took care of it. David in Psalms, if you read the Psalms, when things around him, his atmosphere, the circumstances aren't going the way God promised, the way God says, he falls on his face and says, God, what's happening? Why isn't how you promised? What's wrong here? And God tells him. Here these people are, and the things around them are getting warmer, crops aren't growing, vegetables are falling down, salt is on their heads, and they're not falling on their face. They're not paying attention to the different ways and the different things God is using to speak to them. To the different people, to the different circumstances. They're not paying attention to the Spirit, to the Scriptures. They're not paying attention to the different ways God uses to speak to them. So God says, I don't care about your heart. It doesn't matter what your intentions are because you're guilty for your own ignorance. Because I warned you, I tried, and you would not listen. What's so scary about this is that these people could come to him and say, well, look at my heart, though. I had a good intention, so I didn't let these nations come in to defile us. We wanted to serve you. But God says, that doesn't matter anymore. What's so scary is even though their heart might have been in a good place, their actions and their lack of hearing God's voice, of being intentional of hearing God's voice, did them in. That's why God is the pestilence. That's why God sent the hail. It doesn't matter about the voice. It doesn't matter about their heart in this situation. Now, that's scary. You know, you ever wonder? Last Wednesday night, we had this discussion, and somebody brought it up. I don't know who did. But they were looking at passage and we were saying, how come this doesn't happen with us? How come we don't see his power in our lives? How come we don't see God move and do some great things as he did with the first church with us? How come we don't see the miracles? Or how come God doesn't use us like he did Paul or Barnabas or Silas? How come he doesn't do that? Now one person can say that and just put it in the back of the mind and continue on. But another person will realize, well, wait a minute, something isn't lined up with what God promised. God said we'll do greater things. Something doesn't line up. So one person can move on, but another person will fall on their face and say, God, what's wrong? You ever wonder why God promises joy to those who follow him, but maybe your life isn't full of joy? You ever wonder why God promises peace to those who live in him, yet your life is full of anxiety, fear? You ever wonder about the power that God says you'll have in this world, power to do his work, but your life is full of weakness and helplessness? You ever wondered about the goodness of God in your life, but your life is full of misery? Do you ever wonder why sometimes the promises of God aren't lining up in your life? You know, we could come to church and we could do everything we're supposed to do as a Christian. We could come here and do our rituals. We could sing our songs. We could listen to a sermon. We could pray at the altar. We could do our tithes and do our offerings. We could be a part of ministry. We could come to Wednesday night Bible study. We could do all these things. But if we're not listening to the voice of God, if we're not paying attention to the different ways He's trying to speak to us and guide us, the task He has us for individuals as a church, we're missing out. We're not pleasing God. It doesn't matter how much you pray, how much you offer, give your money, how much you worship Him. If you're not obedient to Him and what the task He has for you today and now, you're going to be guilty for your own ignorance. Like we're sitting in a tub, water's getting hot, and we're not paying attention to the different things God's trying to warn us. Or you ever drive your car, right? You drive your car, and next thing you know, you're at your arriving, and you wonder, where did the last 5 minutes go? How did I pass that? Yeah, that ever happened to you? Or you ever drive somewhere intending to go one place, but through habit, you end up going somewhere else? That's what we do as Christians sometimes. We tune, our mind just goes blank. We get in our habits of worship and of praise. Our hearts are right. But we stop listening for the voice and the different directions God giving us. And if you read the book of Acts, how God leads, God is always telling Paul, or telling Philip, go here. Go here, do this. He doesn't keep us in our rituals and our habits. You know, as a church, we can have our church, we can have our services on our Wednesday nights, but as a whole, if we're not seeking God's direction, we're not seeking God's voice, we're just driving in our car, oblivious to what's going around us, we're not going to please God. We're going to be unacceptable. Now, part of the responsibility of discerning God's voice is mine as a pastor. But I'll tell you what, God always confirms it. God always confirms His direction in your life in many different ways and as a church. So it's not just my responsibility, it's yours as well. If you're a part of this church, you better be paying attention to the different ways God's trying to speak to you. Because when I say something, I feel God's leading us this way, you'll say, you know what, He spoke to me too. He's leading me in that same direction. Or you'll say, wait a minute, Jacob, you're far off. You better go pray again. God confirms Himself. He just doesn't speak through circumstances. He speaks through His Word, the Spirit, speaking to our hearts. He speaks through time of prayer when we pray. He speaks through people, through pastors, through friends. And He confirms what He wants for us. Are we sitting in a pot? Are we aware of how hot it's getting? Are we aware of how our lives aren't lining up with some of the promises of God? Just cooking ourselves. Haggai goes on though, and he says this in verse 18. He just said, remember, from before you started building a temple, you were people that were unclean, and you never had enough. Never enough food, never enough to drink. But in verse 18, but from this day on, from the 24th day of the ninth month, give careful thought to the day when the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid. Give careful thought. Is there yet any seed left in the barn? Until now, the vine and the fig tree and the pomegranate and the olive tree have not borne fruit. But from this day on, I will bless you. Before this point, before you were obedient to me, before you were listening, before when you were not listening to my voice, you were people who never had enough. You were not blessed. But from this day on, you will look. In the future, you will look back to the day you decided to listen to my word and be obedient and to serve me with a passion and to bring all you had. From that day on, when you started laying, you'll find yourself a blessed person, a blessed nation. We've been going through Haggai, and I am amazed sometimes as we go through Haggai, how powerfully God's word speaks to us and our situation. I'm amazed at how He just pierces who we are as a people, as a church. I'm amazed at how it just, these messages on Haggai has fit us as a people. And if you've been moved, if God has moved in your heart, says, okay, I want you to become a people of passion again, to put your hope back in me. I want you to be a people who change, who bring whatever you have to God so that He can take it and do something marvelous with it. He wants you to be a people who start to listen and pay attention to my voice and what I'm calling for you now today. If we have as a church decided to do that, if we have done that as individuals and as a church, later on in our future, we will look back to this day and say, this is the day that God really started to bless us. This is the day where I found joy where there was no joy, where there was misery. This is the day I started to find peace where there was only anxiety. This is the day where I began to see God's power when there was lack of power before. The message that Haggai had for us, for his people, is a message that God has for us. Will we respond? Will we listen to his voice and respond with a passion, bringing all we have? Or will we just sit in our pot and boil?